Hi, welcome to Soul Speak. In today's episode, we are going to talk with a friend of mine and a remarkable man who has a story that needs to be told about when we feel loss and how we find our way back into faith. Thank you for joining us. Hi, I'm Meg Michelson. Thank you so much for joining, for liking, for sharing. We really do appreciate it. So in today's episode, we are speaking with a man that I just really have affinity for. His name is Brett Norgaard, and he's struggled with some big loss in this lifetime. And during that time of his loss, he's also been able to find times to laugh and to share and to help others. So it's really a beautiful journey of feeling the loss, but finding your way back to having faith again. So welcome to this episode, Brett. Thank you so much for being here.
It's great to be here, Meg. Thank you.
I want to do a quick introduction of how I know Brett, because it's kind of a funny story. And in all of life's weird, serendipitous moments, this was one. Our kids went to school together in a place called the community that was first through fourth grade, and two of our kids were there. We met during a kids' performance. And Brett was sitting, I believe, behind me, and he had his youngest daughter named Ingrid, who was about 4 or 5 then, and she had no shoes on. And so I turned around, we were talking, and we realized we had both had the Simpson family. We had our oldest was a boy who were friends in the community. Our second were our daughters who were friends in the community. And our third, our youngest, who were between 4 and 5, they had not yet become friends, but they did. And so we shared this journey. I was married and Brett was married, and all 4 of us adults became really good friends. So we spent a lot of time together and our kids enjoyed each other's company. And it really was a beautiful friendship, and it still exists today. Just a lot of things have changed.
To comment first on our kids, I mean, as a parent, you always want to see your kids have great friends. And with the Michelson kids, we experience that the kids, not only did they were at the same age, they really liked each other. We did a lot of things together. We'd go camping. We would go, I remember one time camping, our two middle ones came running back frightened, and they had gotten between a cub and a mother bear, and luckily got out just in time. And that was made for some nice stories around the campfire. And then we would have a lot of weekends together where our family would actually have a sleepover. The whole family would go over to Michelson's, and then they would come over to our house, and the parents would, you know, have 70s music on. The kids would be playing in the basement. And years later, I noticed that my kids, as I was driving along, and like one time American Pie came on, and as soon as you heard the little riff, a long, long time ago, then the kids started to sing, and I turned it up, and you know, they were cranking along. And then when it got to the courtroom was a germ, man, we had a little laugh. But I still sing it that way to this day.
And I want to add to that, because Brett's oldest, Bjorn, was a day older than our oldest, Alex. They were a day apart. And our second, Sonia and Emma, and they were 2 weeks apart. And our third, Liz and Ingrid, were 4 months apart. So we can say that was all coincidence, or we can say we were really meant to know each other, which we believe we were meant to know each other.
Yeah, we're still thankful for that, as you called it, serendipitous crossing of paths.
And in that time, you've had some really big loss. Well, I want you to go back and start where you want to start with the journey of your faith and how you found your way back into having faith again.
When my wife passed away, Karen passed away last May after about a 6-month illness, and she continually declined. And at the point where she passed away, our family was trying, my daughters and I were trying to decide, you know, what kind of memorial service should we have? Should it be a funeral or at the church or somewhere else, or should it be a party? And after some conversations, we landed on that we would go to the church that I was still a member of technically, but I hadn't been there for years and years, and I hadn't met either of the pastors. Former pastor who had done Bjorn's funeral, and I'll get into that in a second, and had also married my daughter, Sonia, and Kyle, my son-in-law, and we tried to get him and Mark Johnson. And as a former pastor, it is very difficult to come back to your old church. He was beloved. He'd been asked by many people to do the funeral. He sat at my kitchen table, very, very tearful. He wanted with every, you know, part of his being to do that, but he couldn't do it. So he recommended one of the pastors at the church, whose name is Jonathan Davis. And Jonathan, I had not met before, and he didn't know Karen. So he's trying to put this sermon together, and he had our daughters and myself come in. We met both the pastors. We talked for about an hour, and then he wanted to do a little more follow-up on Karen. So we had a time scheduled to talk for 15 or 20 minutes on the phone. And as fate would have it, the phones, and we're both on the same service, Verizon, and they were just disconnecting every couple seconds. So I finally got in my one sentence, which was, "Hey, are you in your office?" He said, "Yeah, come on down." So I went down to his office, and we spent probably 90 minutes. And we were talking about Karen and her love of kids and baby animals and old people, but mainly grandkids. We have two grandkids, and she absolutely loved them. And in fact, as she was nearing the end, that was really the last, I'll say, ember that kept her going for the very end. After the funeral, Jonathan and I, it turned out that we became very good friends. After the Lent season began, he approached me and said, "You know, hey, because of your interest in the sermons and words and stories, and I know about your journey of loss, would you be willing to tell your story, the homily, at a Lenten service?" So I actually did that last Wednesday.
Every one of us humans has loss. And sometimes it's a significant loss that is heart-wrenching that we never get over, like the loss of Bjorn. And sometimes it's the loss of a job. And we all experience loss, or loss of whatever relationship we had. And when you navigate that, you know, when you look at your journey, when you and Karen found out that Bjorn had died. So your journey over these past 14 years since Bjorn's loss, I imagine you don't look at it and say, "One day I just woke up with faith." It is a journey. And maybe you could start with the loss of Bjorn.
I was on the church council for 7 years. And the last stint, I was teed up to be on the youth board, which meant that I headed the youth board and I was on the church council. There had been a really tough time with one of the youth directors leaving, and it wasn't a nice situation. And my predecessor just came to me and said, I can't handle it anymore. Would you jump in a year early?" So I agreed to it. And this was about now mid-February of 2011. And I had just gone on Tuesday night to my last board meeting. To be frank, I was happy to be done. I've been on it for 4 years. I did an extra year, and now I was moving into retirement, at least until they asked me to be on a different board. That weekend, there was a big storm coming in, and, you know, 2.5 feet of snow. Karen and I took that time. It was just the two of us at home. We took that time to just really kind of hunker in. She did cross stitch, and she hadn't touched her cross stitch for, I'll bet, 15 or 20 years. And she dug it out and off she went. She was completely content. I was making these little kind of models of these benches that I was coming up with. Now we're into Sunday. We got a phone call from our daughter, and she said that the neighbor had said that there was a sheriff that was trying to find us. And that was about it. It was fairly cryptic. A few minutes later, we get a knock on our door, and it's the sheriff and the deputy. They said, "Are you the parents of Bjorn Erik Norgaard?" You know, they include the middle name, which was the telltale sign, I think. And then when they told us that he'd been killed in a hit and run car accident while skiing across Schwalingen Bay up Lake Superior. I remember collapsing to the floor, and then I don't remember a lot about what happened next, other than less than 24 hours later, probably 18 hours later, we were sitting around our kitchen table planning the funeral for our boy. Bjorn was 23. He had just graduated from college. He had gone up immediately after college. He was a fly fishing guide up in Alaska. Had just a wonderful experience. Had the world by the tail. He was looking to do his next adventure. He probably would have gone down to Key West to have been a fly fishing guide during the winter months with one of the clients that they had when he was up in Alaska.
This was completely unexpected. Completely unexpected.
Complete shock. Complete shock.
What happened with you and your relationship with God? Because you believe in the higher power and you call your higher power God. Tell us about that. What happened?
I was very, very angry with God. I said, I just spent 4 years. I did an extra year on the youth board and you took my kid. I was very, very angry. And so the way that manifest was I just didn't go to church. When the pastor Mark was doing Bjorn's funeral, in his sermon, he said that God was the first one on the scene, on the accident scene. Bjorn had been hit by a truck. There were two teenage boys that were in the car, and they panicked, I think as teenage kids would do. And they left the scene, and because of Bjorn's body heat, he actually sunk in. He froze into the ice. I think the sign was that the person to discover Bjorn the next morning had the initials of JC, and he was a carpenter. And back to think about that a bit. And, it could have been a lot of different initials, a lot of different professions, but that was the one.
And at that time, I imagine that didn't comfort you, or did it? You know, when you're looking at that experience, and that you and Karen were both doing things before that knock on the door, that you were in a place of peace. And then JC finds beautiful Bjorn. Did you think of that right away, or did that come over time?
I don't think I thought about that right away, but I think over time, I just kept coming back to that. You know, how is that? And there have been some other things that have happened as well. My sister Cheryl, who's been just a rock for me, she's a year younger. We do everything together. She and I decided that we would walk the race that Bjorn had done the year prior, where he had been killed. And it's an absolute beautiful event. It's called Book Across the Bay. It benefits local charities. What they do is, there's a straight shot between Ashland and then going straight north to Washburn across this little Schwalingen Bay. It's about 6 miles. And the community all gets together and, using 5-gallon buckets, they freeze those and make ice luminaries. It's lit the whole way. I mean, it looks like a runway. Just as evening starts in Ashland, people ski it, or they walk it, or they hike it. We were walking, which is, 6 miles is, I don't know, two, three-hour walk. So anyway, we had connected up with one of Bjorn's friend's parents, whom I had not met. And, had a hug and a cry with them. Our boys were very, very good friends. And his parents had met Bjorn when they dropped Jules off. Bjorn somehow interacted with them. And he told me that on their drive back, they were saying, hey, I hope Jules becomes friends with that kid, Bjorn. And they became great friends. So my sister and I are walking straight north, just talking with Jules' parents and a couple of other kids. And pretty soon the kids kind of left, us old people behind. And the whole time we're going north. We can see the stars heading straight north. Then we got almost all the way across. We got to the spot where Bjorn had been hit. I had written something that I brought along for you, Meg. When we got to that spot, I turned our little group around back to look at Ashland, straight south, 5 miles behind us. And in Bjorn's voice, this is what I wrote. I called it Ashes to Ashland. My Ashland, dear Ashland, up there on the lake, my ashes to there please do take. Oh, how I love thee, the water so blue, yet better in winter, cross ice I flew. At night, starry night, in the crisp and the cold, toward Ashland, dear Ashland, I'll never get old. To Ashland, dear Ashland, at the end of the day, my skis pointed homeward, they both know the way. The ice crunches loudly, 'tis the only sound, with each pole thrust closer to Ashland I'm bound. To night, starry night, how I love to roam, my ashes to Ashland, I'm coming home. For Bjorn, with love, from Dad. The minute I finished that poem, we could hear cheering everywhere on the ice, and nobody was within earshot. But there were groups all over the place, behind us, ahead of us, off to the side, you know, just this kind of mob, you know, going across the lake, and we didn't know what it was. And we flipped around, and at that very instant, the northern lights had come out. And we had been walking north the whole night. I mean, it wasn't like they came out again. They had not been out, and boom, at that very instant, because I thought, how could people be cheering? I just, you know, they couldn't hear what I read. Another, I'll say a little tiny sign, but not too long after that. Bjorn loved the song Wagon Wheel. You know, Bob Dylan wrote it, and the Old Crow Medicine Show, you know, made a hit out of it. And when our beloved dog Buddy had died, Bjorn, to grieve the dog, made a CD, and Wagon Wheel was on it. And then we came up, I don't even know how we found it, but he sang Wagon Wheel at this in the basement of the school, you know, student center.
Bjorn did.
He sang it, and then it just became this song that was reminiscent of Bjorn. My wife Karen, every time she heard it, she would cry, but yet she wanted to hear it. It reminded her of Bjorn. So anyway, Cheryl and I, you know, we just had the flip around, looking back. We've seen the northern lights. The rest of the group kind of went on ahead of us. We wanted to hang back a little bit, and I wasn't sure why. And my sister reached in her backpack, and she pulled out a special little candle. Bjorn's confirmation scripture was this little light of mine. And anyway, so she pulled it out. We lit it, and we just kind of sat there arm in arm singing this little light of mine. And then began our journey. So now we've only got about a mile to go. So we've been out there for a few more minutes. And then we can hear Wagon Wheel playing. It was the tent at the end with, you know, the beer and the music and the fellowship and all of that. A lot of things were happening that night, and signs, I guess you'd call them in some way.
How did that help you? And I want to stretch that a little bit, because when you have that significant of a loss, you go through a dark night of the soul. You're angry. You had that, what does this all mean? Why would you take my son after I'm doing all this good? You know, that's the dark night of the soul. And some people don't get out of that. And some people do. Talk about that a little bit, like how those signs helped you, and did it help the feeling of loss, or is that loss still gaping? And there's no right or wrong answer. It's really about how that affected you, and just like you're a poet, of course, your son was as well.
Karen and I attended a grief group probably about 6 weeks after he passed away, and a lot of people that were in the group expressed surprise that we were there that early. A lot of times, I guess, people or couples or parents or people that lost someone wait, you know, a few more months until we did it. The first couple of meetings were kind of intense. You know, you're sharing your story. The rest, there was probably six or seven other people in the group that had lost children. All moms. I was the only dad in the group. And one lady in particular, as she was sharing her story, she remained extremely bitter. And she was bitter at her son's friends, because the friends at his funeral had told her, the mom, that they would keep in touch, and that hadn't happened. And Karen and I probably had some of the best deepest spiritual conversations in the 20 minutes that we had driving home after that grief support group. We are talking about that, and we said that we did not want that to happen to us. We did not want that. Then we said, you know, grief does not only accrue to the immediate family, but to a lot of people outside of that. He had this great group of friends. They had just graduated from college, and some of them were still in college. Some of them were out, you know, high school friends and all this. And this group, I'll say, of kids, they were, you know, 20-somethings, my daughters, their friends, everybody was hurting. So we reached out to every single kid and said, hey, we are so sorry for the loss of your friend. And all of a sudden, something, I guess I'll say magical, really occurred. We reached out, they reached out to us. In some sense, I became a little bit of the proxy for Bjorn. I got invited to music festivals and camping and concerts and movies and just hang out. And I had noticed one time that this was after Bjorn died. We were going out to something called a Queeb, which is a kind of a little mini Burning Man out in the woods. And we were with a bunch, I was with a bunch of kids, and one of the girls that were there, her parents, we were in a restaurant. Her parents came in, we waited at the parents, she hopped up and she, you know, went off to be with the parents. And I thought, that would be me if Bjorn were here, you know, he wouldn't want me, you know, hanging out with all of his buddies. And I think, so I went from a position where I always knew the friends of my kids, but now I became friends. And I don't just say, hey, these are Bjorn's friends. These are my friends. And I don't know where I'd be without them.
So you stayed open to multiple things. Now, when you look at your journey, you've always been a creative soul. You look at your journey, you continue to create, right? In so many ways. Yes, with poetry, but also with new friendships and new opportunities. And you didn't let the anger take over.
Right, right. One of the things that we looked at doing was we wanted to help Bjorn, you know, fulfill his hopes and dreams. And there was a scholarship set up. But I mean, that takes zero effort. And when we were talking about, I mean, we never thought that it was his hope and dream that a scholarship would be set up in his name. I mean, it was very needed at the school. But we thought, what else can we do to fulfill his hopes and dreams? Thinking of like setting up a little micro charity of our own or coming up with something. And eventually we landed back up at Northland College, which was his alma mater. This was an outside the classroom grant that students could apply for. And the way we wrote it is for these kids to do something to honor their adventurous spirit. So they could get a grant and they could get a firefighting license or travel or, and the group that we kind of baked in to it was Bjorn loved to Nordic ski, cross-country ski. And he had helped start the ski club at Northland in 2009. And so we baked in or hardwired that each year a young man and a young woman would have their Berkey ski race, which is always the last weekend in February and was a big part of Bjorn's life. They would always have their Berkey fee covered. And then in addition to that, we would have these kids come down to our place. We have a cabin close by. They would come down to our place on Friday, big carbo spaghetti dinner, get to know them, get them off to bed early, get them up in the morning, drop them off, you know, cheer them on at the end. And then we have a big party at our house. This was the way that we could ensure that we knew kids going on and on and on. Because after 2 or 3 years, there was no overlap with Bjorn. And it was really important that we kept that going. And that thing grew. I mean, we had, I think the last couple of years, we had 5 students. And we had to figure out how to, you know, how to make that happen. But we stayed with my mother and father-in-law, Karen's parents, and they were extremely generous with their home. And we were able to accommodate, you know, more and more. And then I've kept up with the all these kids. And I was just tallying it up. It's 37 different kids we got to know that came down. And I keep in touch with them. Every year, I invite them to come back for the party. And every year, two or three would come back. And, you know, some I would never hear from, but, you know, they're off, you know, living life to the fullest. But it was a very special thing. We named the grant Brother Bear. Bjorn stood for bear in Norwegian. My daughters, Ingrid and Sonia, called him Brother Bear. I really wanted something that would tie them to this directly. And so that's something that we did. And I just absolutely loved it.
And you know, the movie Brother Bear, one of the big events in that movie is the Northern Lights.
When we were naming it, I have a friend who at the time was employed by the college, a wonderful lady. I asked her, I said, is calling something Brother Bear, I mean, is that, could that be offensive? And she said, absolutely not. She said that there was such a kinship, I think, between bears and humans. And then she said something I'll never forget. She said, if you completely remove the fur off of a bear, it looks like a human being. I have not seen that. I don't really want to see that, but it was kind of her way of saying, like, you putting her imprimatur on it, like, yeah, this is a good name. So
during this journey, you brought more people in to the journey so you could continue to love. And there was an affiliation of some sort with Bjorn and his friends and the hobbies he loved. And that allowed your heart to continue to expand and not shrink. And I don't know if you intentionally did that, but do you understand that that's what was going on? It was the expansion of your heart so you wouldn't shut down.
Yeah, yeah. I felt closest to Bjorn when I was doing the things that he loved at the places he loved and with the people that he loved. Well, I'll say he was well loved. One thing that happened early on when Karen and I dropped him off for his freshman year at Northland College, Karen, you know, kind of blubbered all the way home. She was so sad, you know, her firstborn being dropped off at school. A couple of weeks later, we were back up for Parents' Weekend. And we were walking around the mall up there with Bjorn. He was kind of recounting his 4 or 5 day orientation trip up to the Boundary Waters. And then he said, he was like, yeah, yesterday we had a campus-wide capture the flag, you know, and with him, everything was epic. And then he was saying, like, after that, we all came back. There's a big, like, fire pit area. He said we all came out there and everybody had their sleeping bags and we slept out under the stars. And Karen, I remember, I'll never forget this. She stopped and just kind of gripped my arm and said, he's found his people. He had people before that, but that was, that to me really, really resonated. And then, you know, partly supporting that, people from all over were yelling, happy birthday, happy birthday. It happened to be his birthday that very day. And we just couldn't figure out, how did he know so many people? 2 weeks at school and he knows like the whole place. And then we got to be pretty close to some of the faculty and, you know, they expressed their love for Bjorn. They were hurting. They sent a delegation from Ashland down to Northfield for Bjorn's funeral. There was probably 4 or 5 faculty members and 20 or 30 kids, and they all piled into our house. And the kids, you know, and stayed for, oh gosh, several days, I believe.
His people. And he touched a lot of lives. So that was the legacy he left. So when people think of Bjorn, they smile. How you have decided to live doesn't mean you didn't have pain. And so I want to talk about that a minute, because sometimes when we have a big loss, we just stay busy, or maybe we'll get into some escapism tendencies and we're not dealing with the pain. We're putting the cork in the throat and stuffing it, and then it comes out sideways. It's either depression or anger or irritability. And yet you have decided, I'm going to live in his honor in a way, and yet you still grieve. I want you to talk about that a minute, if you're willing. It's not either or, is it?
Karen and I really didn't see eye to eye. We weren't grieving the same way. I've heard that the loss of a child, ends, many, many, many marriages. And we didn't want that to happen. My counselor, Dan, had suggested that I read The Prophet by Khalil Gibran. I have it right on my bedstand. There was a line in there that I didn't believe at first, but I came to not only believe it, but to embrace it. The book, The Prophet, is wonderful. And basically, the prophet is getting ready to leave his home because the ship has come into the harbor, and he's walking down through the city, and people are just asking him questions. Then a woman said, "Speak to us of joy and sorrow." This is the line: "The deeper that sorrow carves into your being, the more joy you can contain." And when I read that, I did not believe that. I mean, how could there be light at the end of, what we just went through? But over time, I had a couple of scares, health-wise, and that got you to really contemplate your mortality. And I just felt that for the time that I'm here, and we all have to go, I want to do things. I want to be there for my daughters. I want to be there for my grandkids. I've got all these friends. I continue to make new friends. During the time where Karen was ill, she had this point of view that she was going to outlive me. And we didn't argue about that. And I just took it under advisement. But the whole time, I just thought, it's not my time to go. I don't know when it will be my time to go, but I heard a pastor one time say, everybody wants to go to heaven, but not quite yet. So here I am living life at this point, kind of rolling along.
And yet you still grieve. You have happy moments and you have grief, correct? You still miss him and long for him sometimes. Or not? How does that feel?
One thing I recall, recently, this is the year of firsts for Karen. She passed away last May. And Karen was really the heart and soul of our family when our kids, were growing up and we're all in the house together. Over the last few years, we've been empty nesters for, quite a while. With Karen's health deteriorating, I think she had kind of lost the sparkle a little bit. I mean, it was certainly there for the grandkids and for our immediate family, but it was starting to wane. And what I found myself missing this year was the Karen and the family back when our kids were all there. And it isn't just like I'm missing only Karen at Christmas. I'm missing Bjorn and I'm missing the family. My daughter Ingrid was talking to me and she said, "Dad, one morning we would just walk downstairs and it would be a Christmas wonderland. There would be, the tree would be up. We had a little Santa tree. So I'd go on the ditch, look around a little bit and then cut one of these little red, dogwoods. And then Karen, like her grandma, like her mom, would have 100 little Santa Clauses hanging on it. There would be the Advent calendar, and there would be cake. And I mean, it was amazing. And I was just go downstairs and get the 7 bins, out of storage, and then she would just put everything up. And then over time, that just wasn't happening anymore. So I would go down and get one little bin and pull out a few of the family, the family treasures and get a little tiny tree. And this year, so I'm alone this year, and I was kind of dreading going and getting the tree. I grabbed a little Scotch pine, right outside the grocery store. So, I didn't even go to the Christmas tree, place. And I got that home and I just said, I'm not going to be sad. Karen would not want me to be sad. So I put on some Christmas music. I hung my little, family treasures, which is the kids when you met them, Meg. I mean, it was when they were little, kindergarten, and they make little pictures and a little Christmas ornament. And I have, a half a dozen of those. and those were up. And then we've got a few other that are, you know, a little more quirky, I guess I'll say, but still, you know, treasures. And so this year, I really, really found myself missing, not last year, but the years of old with my family, with all my family.
So, Brett, I just have a couple more questions. One is, if you could share, when you look at your journey and all the things that have helped guide you back to living a life of faith, what is one thing or a few things that really were the biggest help?
I think the time that I spent with my daughters and my family and my grandkids, I mean, that was kind of the balm, I think, a little bit. And certainly, you know, on the heels of that, was just this group of friends, you know, friends that I have, but all of a sudden this whole group of younger friends. And the treasure is getting to know and finding your people, as Karen had said. So that was one of the things that I talked about in my homily last week, was that if you find your people, you can find yourself. And as I got thinking more about that, then I thought, well, if you can find yourself, then you can find your way back home. So that was, and now I have a song for my story that I even extended, you know, because it's just finding people. So you find yourself, and then I wanted to, you know, find my way home. And when I was meeting with my pastor to talk about his sermon for Karen, after 90 minutes, we were done. I got up and I don't even know what came over me. I'm going to talk with him about this on this Thursday. I don't know what came over me, but I just said, hey, I'm going back to church. So the very next Sunday after Karen's funeral, I'm sitting at my kitchen table. I'm putting my grocery list together. And all of a sudden, I just felt like I was gripped by something. Like, I have to go to church. So I remember, like, just looking up, like, God, like, okay, I'll go. And I've been back ever since. I'm back. And then this friendship I have with Pastor Jonathan has been amazing. We're kind of laughing the other day. I said to him that he is my people.
When we talk about, you know, finding our people, and I do recommend you, everyone listening to that song, because it's beautiful.
Okay.
Finding our people is our tribe. And so whether that's in your church or in your neighborhood or in your family of origin, so when we look at what really does help loss, it's not to be alone and not to grieve alone and not to let ourselves sink into being alone, because it is so counterproductive. It is so important to find your people. And maybe you're one of the lucky ones that already has your people. And we're going to go into a different episode down the road about how do we find our people, because it's vital. I would love to tell the young people out there, and maybe you have some words of wisdom too, Brett, that you're going to go through a lot of loss in this lifetime. Big loss, little loss. It is, unfortunately, part of life. And as the prophet said, that gaping hole in your heart, sorrow can lead to big joy, because we can't have one without the other. And we get to fill it. Every time we have a loss, we get to choose how we're going to fill it. Not stuff it, but fill it. So I really recommend going forward, can you let yourself count on others?
I had a mentor one time that told me, I'd be thankful for what you have. I truly am. When there is grief, and there will be grief, just to have faith that there is light on the other side of that, and that over time, that grief, you know, carves you, and then it'll be joy. And like I say, I didn't believe that, but now I do, and I would tell that to anybody.
Gratitude is huge. Starting our day, finding ways to feel grateful is huge. Thank you so much for being here. It is,
my
of course,
pleasure.
It's
my pleasure.
Wonderful.
Thank you,
Mary. And we'll do it again. Everybody, thanks for listening, and again, for sharing and comment, because we love to read the comments. Let us know what you want to hear. Have a beautiful week, and we'll talk to you again soon. Hey, listeners, thank you so much for being part of the Soul Speak world. I really appreciate that. And if you're willing and if you find this of value, would you please follow on any of the platforms you're listening to, whether that's Apple or Spotify or Google or any of the platforms? And of course, I love the ratings if you find this valuable. You can also follow me on YouTube and like and share. And all of that really makes a difference. Appreciate your participation. And of course, I really appreciate you being part of this world.